propose l'adoption du procès-verbal de la dernière réunion tel qu'amendé aujourd'hui.
I second the motion and move to have consensus adoption.
That motion means that we don't have to vote, right?
Yeah.
Next part is business arising from the minutes of the previous AGM. Do you have any business? I didn't see any particular business. Business. The one thing I saw. Yeah, exactly that. Jean-François asked that the annex of page 3 on the financial report will be translated to French. I thought I saw it translated.
That was translated,
yes,
last year.
Okay, so we can move to the president's report. Do we need to approve?
There were no items.
Any more items? In the business,
no
rise. All right, so welcome everybody. President's report. So I'm happy to report another solid year of everything financially and overall service to the Canadian international EA community. Like previously, we have solid finances that allow us to. In this year, not only continue doing what we have been doing, but also plan on upcoming projects, most specifically revamp of Sonus. With steady work by Jeff and with help from Eve and help from guest editors, eContact remains a very solid resource for EA artists, researchers, students. Share trends and information beyond, within and beyond academia. And we had three issues this year, since the last AGM, that were published already, with a couple more coming soon. 15.3, the CEC 25th anniversary tour, which was a fully bilingual issue documenting the celebration that took place in nine cities across Canada. It also marks the launch of the CEC YouTube channel that started with 60 videos when it was launched. All, I think, from the tour, right? Seminars and interviews, performances. Issue 15.4, Video Music, an overview of an emerging art form, which is an important trend in electroacoustics in the last decade, more so, but it's definitely up and coming. And this issue was had an editorial by Joseph Hyde, and also a historical summary of visual music by Moore MacDonald, putting everything in context, which I know to be quite spread and broad. 16.1, Jeu de Time Play, 2013. That was released, it was the last one released, yeah. Annual issue promoting works of JTTP winners, and upcoming is 16.2, interactive sound art in Singapore with guest editor Per Magnus Lindborg. Also 16.3, Ties 2013 Proceedings, edited by Emily. And 16.4, Experimental Practices and Subversion in Sound, with guest editor Karen Weissenbrunner. Okay, so with eContact, CC continues to provide service to the international EA community, keeping up to date with current trends, remaining open to everything electroacoustics. In some ways, I think it's the most versatile activity of the CEC in terms of moving towards or between many, many practices. JTTP 2014, I would like to congratulate the six winners. this year. In order of prize, fifth place was tied with Lynn Cacho, Pierre-Luc Lecour, Guillaume Côté, Fernando Franco, and tied for fifth, Sébastien Lavoie and Guillaume Barrel.
Hurrah! Good score for you there again. Oops, sorry.
I guess it is the first time we actually announced this, right? It's
yes.
The official announcement to the public will go on Where's the Beat?
Elliot, yep.
With Elliot, Elliot Handelman.
In the second or third Wednesday in September.
Yeah. Thank you. Finances continues to be very stable. Support from writing and publishing section of Canada Council for the Arts for upcoming e-contact. It's the 10th year of SOCON Foundation core funding, which has been rising very steadily. And thank the SOCON Foundation very much. Stable CEC membership, we thank the members very much. It's the third most important contributor to our finances. What are we standing on, like 190?
Sorry, one small. Did you say the fourth year of SOCON Foundation funding?
10th.
You did say 10th.
Yeah. How many members do we have now?
We sit around 190.
190. That includes institutional, honorary.
It's individuals, a range of individuals. Some of the past JTTP winners who have remained after they've had their free membership, after that's run out, they've stayed on as members. Professors, professionals, institutions, libraries around the world, national associations.
Cool. So our next upcoming project that has been due for a while and finally are ready to make some substantial improvements and advances this year is Sonus, the jukebox of the CEC, which is openly free for the public. For streaming, for download as well, right? No, this stream. I downloaded everything.
We'll talk about that.
It's you.
I copied it on the cassette.
So that needs to be fixed. So hackers, you know, like me. Anyway, so it is. The largest of its kind in the world, and it's again, it's very open. It's non-curatorial. Like it's open for the entire EA community on multiple formats and styles and ways of creation. Now we've started talking and discussing what these new improvements will be. Except for just updating technology, there is some conceptual. Things to fix and setting how this works exactly and in what way this is to be I guess promoted and available for the public. So we welcome a lot of ideas and recommendations for what is necessary and what is useful from the membership at large.
With more detail than it's clunky.
Yes. Yeah.
So like it's very clunky. That'd be good.
It's getting better.
It's a little more specific.
Exquisitely.
Toronto International Electroacoustic Symposium. I'd like to extend my deepest thanks to Emily for continuing to lead this conference, which is gaining everything. International recognition, variety, international attendance, of course, a lot of thanks to
Attendees outside of the people who are presenting. Actually, that was the one thing that was different.
This was new this year.
We had 25 registrants that weren't active participants in the symposium, which is a first this year. I think that's in huge part to Matthew Faba and the CMC and their sort of network being joined in as well.
I think it's that. I think it's also it's you know, my opinion is also Paulino Oliveros and the Ulla Kane event. I think these two things make this event particularly memorable this year.
And the excellence of the organization.
And the excellence of the organization. on you. And many thanks to NASA for giving Thai as a home for since its beginning. Matthew Fava, of course, he's not here, but his help was very, very important this year to make this new collaboration with the CMC meaningful. And in closing, in completing my first year as the president of the board, I'd like to express my thanks to the wide CEC community and membership and support. I think the CEC continued to thrive for so many years because of it is a community, because it is a community, and because of the membership. And you know, it's a field that's based on innovation through collaboration and a lot of diversity. And I think it's important to keep this in mind. And with these concluding words, I would like to pass the microphone to Sean for the treasurer's report.
After we move to the doctor.
We have to admit
that.
We can express thanks for the report.
Thank you.
All right. Treasurer's report.
Treasurer's report.
All right. I am very pleased to report on the financial situation of the CEC at the close of my first year as CEC Treasurer. I will discuss the main details of the financial report, which
you have to project more. Project more.
Sorry, I can do that.
You're on stage.
Okay.
Diffuse, maybe. Performance.
I will. I will discuss the main details of the financial report, which indicate a healthy surplus at the end of the financial year. So I'll go through the various points here. Institutional income sources. The writing and publishing section of the Canada Council for the Arts.
Page two.
Sorry?
Page two.
Page two. Yes. Mm-hmm. The writing and publishing section of the Canada Council for the Arts, CCA, has supported eContact since its first volume of four issues some 17 years ago. Funding in the amount of $19,800 has been awarded to the CEC for the 2014 and 15 fiscal year for the publication of issues 17.1 to 17.4. The CEC continues to receive SOCAN Foundation support in the form of an annual core funding grant. This is spread across the various projects and administrative tasks as needed. We're happy to announce that not only was the amount awarded for 2014 raised to $12,000 from $9,000 in 2012 and 2013, but also that a further unexpected $2,000 was awarded this past fiscal year, thanks to SOCAN Foundation's surplus in 2013. Financial report, page 2 of the 2013 and 14 financial report, provides a overview of the revenues and expenses for this fiscal year. As has for many years been the case, the largest contribution comes from the Canada Council for the Arts writing and publishing section, which was mentioned previously, with another important contribution from SOCAN Foundation. Further revenues come from come in the form of membership dues and donations to JTTP. Principal expenses are the CEC's administrative salaries and professional fees, contracted work such as guest editors, translation, and the CEC's accountant. Production costs this year mainly $3,000 set aside for SONUS and communications, internet, web hosting, telephone, etc. Total revenues are $39,668 minus total expenses of $38,813 leave a surplus of $855 for the 2013-14 fiscal year. Page 1, if you want to have a look there, explains the financials. of the 2013-14 year, and the CEC's financial situation as of May 31st, 2014. Looking at the summary at the bottom of the page, we see that the CEC's total assets, $22,376 in the bank with no outstanding revenues, minus liabilities of $16,480, accounts payable but not yet spent as of 31st of May 2014, gives a net asset of $5,896. Accounts payable this year represents money allocated for eContact, professional fees, and cash CD production and distribution, as well as money for the upcoming Sonos upgrade that Eldad has mentioned. The financial situation of the CEC for the 2014 and 15 financial fiscal year is summarized in the annex page on page 3. Right there. Net assets plus the remaining payment for the SOCAN Foundation 2014 core funding grant plus the confirmed Canada Council writing and publishing grant leave the CEC with a working balance of $31,696. So, in closing, we wish to thank our funders and supporters, the Canada Council, the SOCAN Foundation, our many members in Canada and abroad, for their ongoing support of the CEC's activities. We're happy to be able to continue to serve the EA community with projects such as eContact, CEC's online journal for EA, Jeux de Temps Times Play, the annual project supporting young and emerging composers, and Sound Artists in Canada, and Sonus, the online jukebox for EA. That's my report.
Thank you, John.
Mm-hmm. Okay, to accept it. We don't have a report from other board members, right?
We have to move to accept.
We have to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And I've proposed everything so far.
Just on this time.
I'd like to propose that Jean-Francois propose that we accept.
You know, Stephen, every year I struggle how to write this up in 20 minutes for you.
Do we have a proposal?
You ask for discussion?
Did we?
Well, it needs to be done.
I'll second, but now you ask for discussion. If there's any discussion.
So you're proposing?
Yes, actually I am. Seriously. Really.
There's a wedding going on.
That doesn't affect my proposal.
I'll second, but then you...
Any discussion?
I would just like to say that I'm really impressed at the financial state the CEC is in. You who administer and manage it, I'm very, very, very pleased to see it in such good shape and see the funding increased. It's really, really, really encouraging.
True. Thank you. All right, so with your permission, I'll proceed to other business,
mm-hmm.
which this year we have a new proposed and accepted honorary member, Paul Pedersen, the CEC honorary membership, contributed enormously to the Canadian EA community through his work at McGill and U of T. And I wish to invite Kevin Austin, to introduce Paul as a CEC owner member.
I met Paul Pedersen in 1966 when he had finished his PhD at University of Toronto. I believe it was in psychology, actually. He worked on the MEL scale. And he came to McGill at a time when, like many other places, there was interest in new technologies or something, but the old guard was the old school, it was an old music school. Helmut Blumer in 1965 had become the dean of the Faculty of Music at McGill University. McGill at that time had 47 music students, and the board of governors said to him, "We'll make you dean if you'll close down the faculty." And he said, "Well, of course I will do that." So in 1965, he admitted everyone who applied, and the numbers went from 47 to over 70 in that year. And he implemented, this is Helmut Blumer,
and implemented the hiring practice to attract the best and the brightest. And Paul Peterson, along with Bruce Mather, among a little later, were among those people. Paul came to a studio and to teach music theory and music history, but also to work in the studio, the music technology side. The McGill, the old McGill Coach House studio, was a room about half the width of this room with four huge speakers in the corners and some McCain equipment and two tape recorders. And Paul looked at this and said, we can do more, and he did. He remained very focused on the idea of the development of the studio, but also in the general support of music technology taking a much larger place within McGill's curriculum. At that time, we still lived in the time when people would talk about the saxophone. A good saxophonist really sounded like a cello. So if you understand that concept, that you can imagine how far away electronic music was in a field that thought saxophones didn't belong in the halls of power. And Paul worked hard, and he bought the first Moog synthesizer for McGill in 1969. It arrived in the Christmas of 1969. and it was a large, medium large, five oscillators, two VCAs, three ADSRs, filled thing. And at that time, he was also working with Hugh LaCaine a little bit, and Hugh was just finishing his SSSG at the time, an instrument which was a great idea, but like much of what happened in the field, it was 5 years behind the actual front edge of the technology, because it had taken the National Research Council 5 years to build it. And the year I went into the electronic music class in 1969, we started with seven, of which there was almost gender balance. It was five men and two women, for the idea of gender balance in this context. And one lady left after 3 weeks. She was a nun. She used to come in habit. She knew that this new thing was happening, and she knew that it had to be. But that's what McGill was doing at that time. And Paul Peterson was an individual who had this kind of calm, clear head to do this. Ishtvan was a marvelous man. He passed over the administrative responsibilities to Paul, and Paul began to build the studio. He worked on the design of a new faculty of music, which was moved to Sherbrooke Street. He built three studios, and progressively when he left being the director of the studios, and Alcides Lanza took over, another honorary member, Paul became the dean, and as dean, he promoted technology and electroacoustics and the whole thing, and the rest is all history. This was in the days before other places had studios, and when the idea of investing in a studio was significant. McGill had an engineer, even though the studio had 1 year, how many, had four students. They committed to having an engineer to build, and when they moved to Sherbrooke Street, Paul committed to having a full-time engineer whose job was not only to maintain the studios, but to build equipment. Because of Paul's contact with Hugh LaCaine, he was convinced it was in what he did, that it was important that the university invest and engage in this. Another interesting thing about Paul Peterson's work was in 1968, the year after Expo 67, the Scandinavian Pavilion, which was just a square space, was turned into something called Spectrophonium. And Paul was hired, brought in by his friend who owned the audio shop, Dave, whose name will come back to me, to do Spectrophonia. Spectrophonia was a 12.4 channel system with eight channels in the middle and four in the four corners, with strobe lights and color organs on every channel. So there were 12 plus strobe lights. And the first piece they played in there was the Berio Symphonia, recorded with Berio conducting in London. And we worked on mixing down the 16 channel tape a 12 channel 2 inch tape, put timing code in the bottom, and then recorded three channels of electronics to control the lights. Control all of this. And they had a little room on the next room was a lavender kind of gentle lavender. It was the calm down room. They thought
the chill out.
They thought, yeah, chill out. Well, it was a chill out. They thought. And Paul took the photocopy of the burial score, which was handwritten at that time, and went through and detailed all of the lighting cues. A very, very detailed mind. Nothing escaped the mind. He took a project on and he followed through, which is how McGill got the Synclavier. And when they wanted to get the hard drive for it, he found the $10,000 to get the 400K hard drive, and the keyboard itself was many thousands. And Paul stayed invested, and Paul also was responsible in the practical application of creating McGill Records, which developed into, with his hiring of Vislav, developed into the Tonmeister program at McGill, which is the master's and PhD in audio recording, and the entire basis of, from my perspective, I was only there for 11 years or 10 years, so I don't even know the beginning, but from my perspective, Paul was the individual who turned McGill Faculty of Music from a place where teachers could learn to do music, there were like five composition students, into what it is today, Juilliard North, effectively, with this enormous research component. And I think the CEC may have been a little late in recognizing this, but Paul was a composer. He worked with Lacaine's equipment in the 60s. He worked at UTEMS. He worked with visual artists. He did at least two pieces involving slides. One of them is fantasy, and the other one is themes from the Old Testament. And I hope we can find some time to play these at some point and put them up. This is a corner of Canadian electroacoustics that was there. And so Paul is my hat comes off to him.
There you go, man. Yeah?
Yeah.
Adjourn.
You may want to do a
tap the long just to ask people if they.
Okay.
But maybe
yes,
do we have a period?
Maybe you want to adjourn first, and then we can have a tap the long.
Yeah. It was
or
moving to
adjourn. If there are no other things relating directly to the AGM, then
yes.
So who moves to adjourn?
I will move to adjourn.
No.
Hmm? Oh yeah, that's a journal.
We should do the tableau on before me.
I don't think we should.
I check by those. It's the president's choice.
Let's do the tableau.
He has to take everything down for the minute.
Yeah, I know. But you want a recorder?
Yeah.
Okay, so without any kind of pressure, I'd like to hear, you know, any comments, ideas, anything basically from everybody present who wants to speak.
I have one question.
So
yes, just have one question.
Member or not?
Yeah.
Just have one question, very simple question, and it was about the result of the GTTP. I always wonder why it takes so long between, you know, the decision has been made and the official announcement, because I know in the past that some of my students got being told in July that they were awarded the prize, but
right,
don't say any word. And I remember being also having received an award in one competition somewhere, and I had to wait 4 months before being able to say a word about it. I'm always wondering why it is the case. You know, why it is a necessity not to say to everybody, hey, let's go party.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good question.
Is there any reason
yeah.
for that?
It's
yeah.
There's a very, very simple and practical reason.
Okay.
The date for the deadline of the submissions is chosen for the academic year.
Yeah, that's true.
So people are not completely involved in exams or finished and away on vacation.
Yeah.
And we found by looking at the stats and this sort of thing that when we released the results during the summer, it's the information
somewhere.
Didn't get out. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And so we proposed to do it at the start of the of the academic year here.
Yeah.
Which doesn't correspond to some other countries. In the UK, I believe it's in October. Is that when you start?
Yeah.
It's the same in Germany, but it's close enough that it's not lost in the summer vacation.
Okay.
And that gives an extra impetus to the new students going into the year, sort of provides a first warning of that this is something that's ongoing and will come up again in a few months.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
So, by the way, I don't know, are they asked not to advertise?
They're free to tell people, but we ask that they don't simply, you know, mention it in public and publicize the results.
Okay.
And we don't have any real basis to stop them from doing it, but so far everybody has understood that, the reasoning behind it, and has followed that.
Okay. Fair enough.
They're calling now.
The press. Is the microphone this?
Yeah.
Michael.
Yeah, I have a question. So, it's been a year since we moved to establish the advisory council, and since then, to my knowledge, there's been one discussion, which was related to streaming or YouTube or usage in that. I just wondered, those of you who were involved with implementing, what came of that discussion? Have you found so far the advisory council to be helpful? Is there anything we want to just discuss going forward in the next year?
Sure, that's an excellent question. Actually, I did also note on my written president's report, like thanks to the council, which I forgot to say. Now, the council, yes, there was one, which you are on the council, so you know there was one discussion. The council was created to provide diversity, and to provide other points of view before decisions are made, you know, that are relate to the vision and maintenance of the CEC. You know, it's too early to say, you know, how this contribution helps. Because there was one discussion, the reason there was one discussion is because there haven't been that much business to of change. The CC doesn't change very quickly in terms of the kind of things we do, and that's also a strength. You know, that's why it survives for so long, because it's very careful, it's very considerate of the field as a whole, and you know, I have in my mind have a couple more questions. That's as far as it is to ask the council when we get to it. Sonos would be a good place to a good project to discuss, even outside the council. But I think the council would be a great place to start.
And you've mentioned that in private conversations, and because of the stage of the upgrade of Sonos, we need to wait before we start. We have to have information to provide the council with, so that they know where we're coming from. So that is coming, but it's also not something that's intended to be daily active forum.
Oh no, I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. Stephen.
I have an observation or a comment just relates to this symposium. The whole question of publishing papers in eContact, I recognize this is an unusual year, you know, with the 25th year anniversary tour, taking our limited and hardworking admin resources. But it would be really useful if we could somehow have a schedule, have a target date that the presenters can know when you actually anticipate having the papers up. Because, you know, for some of us, it's a matter of whether to distribute. If we get requests to distribute, we don't know when to say, oh, just wait, you know, in another, or by this time it'll be uploaded. I don't want to undermine the eContact presentation by distributing copies. So it would be really useful, and even in unusual situations like this, where it has to be delayed because of limited resources, if we had some kind of a benchmark that we could give to presenters, so they would know when.
There is a benchmark.
When I can get to
but,
it.
we did get behind on a couple of issues, and the 25th anniversary issue was
huge,
a monolith.
Yeah.
And it put a lot of things into a completely different tempo that we're not happy with. And we are putting huge efforts into catching up and getting back on the schedule.
I want to be clear that this is not a criticism.
No, but
decision,
I
but
it,
just
it,
like if there could be more clarity,
it's an issue for us as well, because we do have a clear publishing schedule that we're encountering problems meeting.
Okay.
And this year was a particularly bad one because
yeah.
of the 25th.
Right.
And if you look over since the spring, once we get into the fall, you'll see a density of releases that hasn't existed since the start of the journal.
By the way, there is no sort of stop or limitation on sharing your articles to eContact, right? There is, like
no, but if he's, I mean, the ideal thing for us, of course, and I think
yeah.
also for the authors, is to release the link, not
yeah.
a.
Yeah, it's nice to release it on.
I'd prefer to do that because then it also supports eContact as a distribution platform.
And there's a context for it as well, the paper.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I'd like to speak about two things which are not actually CEC specifically. One of them is Facebook. I'm one of the administrators of the Facebook page, so I get to see the Facebook outreach. And there are 3,000 likes on the CEC. Right now, just to give you a little perspective,
yeah.
there are 190 members of the CEC, 3,000 likes, and this list called CEC Conference, which is whatever it happens to be, has 790 people in 20 countries. And I get to get senses of what's happening. Sometimes the Facebook page just lights up, and there's a 700% increase in the number of visits to the CEC Facebook page, and they tie around events that the CEC has been involved in. There will be a real blip in the next 2 weeks on the Facebook page because of ties.
Mm.
As the announcement for JTTP comes out, because that also gets listed in ACMA, the Australian Computer Music Association, Australasia Computer Music Association, there'll be a blip there for a week or 2 weeks. When information goes on to other lists that goes out as CEC information, there are blips in the Facebook visits. When Jeff sends out a call for papers or a call for whatever it happens to be, or even a notification.
And
Jeff
spams your inbox.
About JTTP, and it goes to all of these other little lists. There's a flow back to the Facebook page, so there's a lot of presence there. And I just wanted to let you know that actually is very strong, and it continues to build. 3,000 likes. If I don't know how many of you, I don't like anything, so I don't. So I would have to probably take that and multiply it by a factor of 1 point something to get the actual number of visits. And Eve sent me a listing of all of the hits on the CEC site, and it's really quite substantial. It's downloading of articles.
eContact.
And it's just continuous throughout the year. It's become
we get an average of approximately 200 hits a day.
It's become eContact has become a primary source, and for those of you who are connected in the community, the international community, I would encourage you, from being out, not on the board anyway, to continue to promote the CEC, not as being the Canadian Association, which it hasn't been since it was actually started. But rather an association in Canada supporting the international electroacoustic community in this way.
If I may offer something is in relation to Facebook and social media, you're talking about these spikes whenever, I'm assuming it's whenever the CEC posts something, like, is that what you're saying?
It's very, very clear around a release of a new issue, a call for works.
Okay. So
something that's just substantial, not, you know, just a link to here's an interesting article or something.
Right.
But something that is directly related to core CEC activities. Yeah.
So there's analytics within Facebook. I'd be very curious if in any way to find out if the spike of activity is people that are already paying attention specifically to like through the CEC list, for example. The reason I'm bringing this up is I did an experiment this year with a lecture series that I run in Montreal, co-run with Jamie Woolard, who's also a student of Eldad's and Kevin. And so we run this lecture series in podcast in Montreal, and we took a lesson with sort of a social media guru. And the best lesson we took from him, or the best sort of idea we took from him was not to treat social media in the way that a newsletter would be treated, sort of releasing information once every 3 months in sort of this big digest, and rather to treat it like daily doses, smaller daily doses. So I was curious about this, perhaps within the context of the CEC, perhaps from a Twitter account, perhaps from Facebook, the idea that you don't have to release your own content either, always. Like, we had presenters, and by the way, I'm saying this because the majority of our traffic coming to our events was generated through social media. Mm-hmm. We presented works from the presenters, from previous works of the presenters, we just posted it daily. Or we would post related work of people that were sort of within their circles daily. And what it did was it got people from their other circles and their other circles and their other circles following what we were doing. So that when we made the announcement of something that we wanted them specifically about us to pay attention to, we had all these other circles that were paying attention to it. So that may be something we're thinking about. We're all part of this. I'm sure some of us are probably on Facebook. I don't know whether or not the CEC Facebook page, you can post to it as just someone who likes it.
Yeah.
But it may be worthwhile.
It is. Yeah, it's open.
Yeah. So, I mean, what Stephen was saying about being able to link to one of his works as because he wants to support the CEC, posting your own content to this, if you see that it is related to the CEC, related to your own work, it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. The CEC would benefit by increased traffic coming from various sources or various networks, but you would also benefit because you're contributing your work and people are seeing your stuff. So mm-hmm. I just wondered that might actually help to increase traffic from areas that we maybe aren't aware of. You know?
Yeah. And as soon as we catch up on eContact, we'll start using social media more actively.
Well, I was going to suggest that
it
social
is, no,
media
you're right. I do agree. I
understand
this. I do understand
right?
it.
You know?
We have done that,
yeah.
And perhaps not enough. But for instance, leading up to, I found some stuff that was related to various issues that were about to be linked, about to be released, and posted here something, you know, as a teaser for an upcoming issue. Or somebody who was involved in the production of one of the issues posted something that is related to theirs,
right.
But yeah, we do need to find a way to use it more actively.
Yeah. May I suggest as well that, or not suggest but offer that one of the best lessons I got from Kevin in terms of making a suggestion or making an idea as a group was, you know, not to make a suggestion unless you're willing to do your part.
It.
Or at least to do it as well. So I'm not saying this, hey, all of you have to do this, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I will start doing this myself, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Good idea.
We love your idea.
Yeah, we love your idea.
Do we need to vote on that?
take some of this DNA, we need some clones.
Well, you guys have content, I'm suggesting that's...
Sure,
that's
yeah.
Yeah,
it could easily be basically the Facebook form of CEC conference. You know, why not? And I'm willing to do it.
I'd like to make a comment about eContact in that is it possible to compile the issues as an ebook or a PDF that could be downloaded as a collective, because with a lot of e-readers or iPads,
mm-hmm.
If you're not in a Wi-Fi zone, you have no internet. So it would be good, you could download it to your iBooks and then take it with you, and then you've got something.
To read.
Yeah.
When you don't know what to read.
Exactly.
Yeah, good idea.
But yeah,
yeah.
You know.
The pages, we have a style sheet that's set up for the actual website itself, and there's a separate style sheet that's set up when you print it. So we actually have defined styles. So if you print a single article, this is not completely an answer to your question, but it's printed. It's not just printed like a, you know, the many websites don't print very well.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a style sheet that makes sure that it gets printed. Links get pulled out of what's embedded and get actually written out as text
mm-hmm.
and this sort of thing. So users can, for example, afterwards actually copy the address if they're using them for citations or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're aware of this, and again, it's to do something as a single compiled issue or volume does require a certain amount of time if you want to do it properly. If you want to prepare this as a volume, you need to embed the links, you need to check all these links, and it sounds like not very much, but it does take a lot of time to do it professionally, like to do a good, nice-looking PDF thing. That's not to say that we're not interested in doing that, but it's, again,
Jeff,
a question of time and resources.
Would it be possible to just take the PDFs that you've already put so much hard work into making and just append them to each other?
We don't make PDFs.
No,
what I'm saying is if you print
you
the page,
you can make your own PDFs.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's
and it looks better than just
but
being
but
web
to
page.
Answer the question, if I were to make the PDFs, either from the master articles, which I have,
right,
and sent to Eve, which he turns
right
into web pages, the best would be from the master article, because
yeah,
there's much more control in it's Microsoft Word and it's crap, but it's at least capable of doing the foundations of,
right,
of page design. It is something we'd like to do, but it's something that I think needs to be taken, you know, if it's going to be done, it has to be done very responsibly, because in some circles, just having the thing printed together and have it look like a rag, that
mm-hmm,
there's no point in doing that.
I think it's what we need to write down. It's a good idea. I mean, like, it's a good idea. We should acknowledge it, and you know, and it's not. It doesn't have to be PDF, of course.
Yeah.
If what you're talking about is not PDF, is really pretty bad on phones, right? Or,
mm-hmm, yeah.
But e-books,
yeah,
there's,
yeah,
there's
it's a whole different story, which is much more optimized for reading in any device, right? So, but
there's one related thing that could possibly resolve this that we haven't had time to look into again, and that's getting all of the articles in eContact listed on WorldCat and
mm-hmm,
in various academic. There have been a few users who've made these comments, and so we've found, you know, the references are talking about the services, and as we find time, we are going to be looking into that.
I think it's one of those tasks that probably should be relatively high on the priority list, because as you advance, the backlog gets greater and greater. It starts to look impossible to put, you know, back content on.
Not with the databases I build.
Okay. Glad to hear it.
Export
information in this format,
nice,
send it to this website.
Good.
Another good discussion by the console. Maybe. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm looking at the numbers of the financial statements, and I have some questions. And I look at the surplus, the non affecté, which is almost $6,000.
That's not the surplus.
Yes, it is.
No. The surplus in the year, this year, is $855, and that's the net assets.
That's right, non-affecté. Therefore, it's waiting there.
Mm-hmm.
And as a rule of thumb, I think that keeping about 10% of your annual budget as a buffer zone is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now it's getting over that 10%, and I'm asking if the CC should consider spending a bit more of that non-affecté there.
No, because
it was a clear answer.
Let me finish. There is a reason why I asked this to be out of the meeting. It's because I've got things to say that I cannot say during the meeting.
Can we move to adjourn?
But whenever it's over, I can contribute more.
I think I can. I can understand. We have other suggestions and questions. All right, should we move to adjourn?
Do I get to do that again?
Yes.
Move to adjourn?
You're good at that.
And now we get the shit.
somebody second.
I second.
We should sign off the broadcast.
All right, thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody, for participating. I'm not finished. Thank you. Thanks for coming. And
see you next year.
I know.